All right, so let's talk money, specifically defense's estate and infrastructure budget for financial year 2025-26. But first, let's look at the overall defense budget for the next 12 months, which lands at a record high of $59 billion. Sounds massive, right? But here lies the kicker. The total increase is 4.2% compared to last year, but when you crunch the numbers for inflation, we're looking at just about 1% real growth.
Exactly. So while that headline number might seem impressive, the real-world implications are a bit more constrained. Inflation eats into the buying power, meaning defence has to achieve more with essentially less growth than it appears on paper.
Yeah, it's kind of like getting a bigger toolbox for your worksite, you know. But when you open it, half the tools aren't exactly in mint condition.
A good analogy, actually. And that's where the role of strategic frameworks like the 2024 National Defence Strategy and the Integrated Investment Program becomes critical. These are the roadmaps that ensure defence places those limited funds where they have the greatest national security impact.
Right, and it's not just about sprinkling money everywhere. The budget sticks closely to strategic priorities. No major new surprises. Most of the funding increases reinforce commitments already outlined in the Defence Strategy Review and the Integrated Investment Program.
Which makes sense when you look at the complexity of rolling out these initiatives. A lot of those big ticket items, like Orca's submarines, pull huge slices of funding with timelines stretched out over years.
And where things do shift, it's not random. A lot of it is about forward planning, like reprofiling funding to accelerate certain projects that are critical now. For instance, moving funds from future years into the current delivery pipeline to address capability gaps faster.
And let's not forget how these budget allocations interact with inflation pressures. They've prioritised areas that reinforce capacity building, bases in strategic Northern Australian locations, for example, while delaying non-essential upgrades in less priority regions.
Exactly. Which transitions us to another huge point in this budget. The emphasis isn't so much on creating brand new funding lines, but on delivering strategically aligned infrastructure projects already identified. Like fewer ad hoc changes, more pushing ahead with what's key.
Right, and those choices are directly tied to the NDS's focus on reshaping defence's posture. So whether it's Northern Airfield modernisations or forward-leaning alliance bases, every dollar is mapped to operational need.
And by doing that, they're setting up the future for big stuff. Hopefully without overloading the present pipeline. It's all building up to Australia's Defence Force being primed for new challenges, right? So, speaking of prioritising strategic funding to reshape defence's posture, let's dive into one of the standout allocations, the Enterprise Estate and Infrastructure Program. It's taking a major slice of this year's budget, with $2.4 billion earmarked for key projects. And I can't help but ask, billions for infrastructure. Where's all that headed exactly?
It's mainly targeted at large-scale upgrades to critical bases, Darian. For example, the Submarine Rotational Force, West Infrastructure Project at HMAS Stirling in Western Australia. That alone gets over $600 million this year, is absolutely central to enabling Australia's collaboration with AUKUS nations.
Right, that's the one preparing for those nuclear-powered submarines, isn't it?
Exactly. It's not just about submarines, though. It includes improved wharves, accommodation and training facilities to support rotational deployments from US and UK fleets. Then there's RAF-based Tyndall, another big one, allocated over $230 million. That upgrade is critical for extending Northern Force projection capabilities and supporting operations with allied forces like the US Air Force.
Wow, when you break it down like that, it's like every dollar is carefully mapped. And speaking of mapping, Northern Australia seems to be getting the lion's share of attention these days, doesn't it?
It absolutely is. Strategically, Northern Territory and Western Australia are priority regions due to their proximity to Indo-Pacific operational zones. Projects like the Northern Territory, training area upgrades, Bradshaw, Kangaroo Flats, places like that, they're key to increasing readiness for large-scale joint training exercises with allies.
Let me guess. The plan here isn't just about building. It's about building smarter, ahead of any trouble on the horizon. Am I close?
Spot on. These investments are all about pre-positioning assets and making sure defence is ready to respond quickly, whether that means moving troops, launching air power, or hosting allied forces. Facilities like the Cocos Islands airfield upgrade, that strengthens Australia's forward operating ability in the Indian Ocean, are textbook examples of future-proofing through infrastructure.
That sounds ambitious, though. Putting all this focus on the north, doesn't that stretch the resources thin for other regions?
Not entirely. While northern infrastructure takes priority, there's still steady investment in other critical areas. For instance, joint capability enablers like fuel transformation programs and new ICT hubs ensure the whole network remains resilient. But you're right, the focus on Northern Australia is intense because that's where emerging threats demand we strengthen our presence.
Ah, makes sense. So beyond just building physically robust facilities, it's also about aligning everything back to strategic objectives. Got it. So, Jess, we've unpacked a lot about where this infrastructure spending is going, but here's the big question. Can the industry handle it? I mean, we're talking billions in projects here, and it's not like resources and contractors are unlimited. What's the plan to actually pull this off?
That's a serious question, Darian, and the short answer is it's complicated. There's no shortage of ambition, but delivery capacity is being tested like never before. Limited skilled labour, stretched supply chains, and the sheer geographic spread of these projects are all major hurdles. And let's not forget the industry's ability to scale up quickly for these uniquely complex requirements like the AUKUS infrastructure.
Yeah, like building facilities for nuclear-powered submarines alone. Talk about engineering on steroids. Not exactly your average workspace, is it?
Not at all. These aren't straightforward builds. They need nuclear-grade standards, workforce expertise that often doesn't yet exist in Australia, and even joint compliance with allied nations' protocols, especially at US standards under AUKUS. Add on the pressure to deliver quickly while managing environmental and governance obligations, and you've got a tall order for the Defence Estate and Infrastructure Group.
You know, it's kind of fascinating how that all fits together, though. It's like a giant puzzle with overlapping timelines and pieces that each demand a different specialised skill set.
Right. Take the Defence Estate Strategy 2030. This is where Defence is trying to streamline all those moving parts. It focuses on networked bases, severe weather resilience, energy efficiency, and partnerships that expand workforce capacity. But even so, it's an uphill battle when you factor in dynamic variables like labour constraints and inflation. A project that looked feasible 3 years ago may suddenly face a 25% cost hike midstream.
Okay, let me ask. You mentioned workforce capacity. Are we talking reskilling locals, importing talent, or robots building robot-proof bases? What's the play here?
Bit of all three, actually. There are Indigenous workforce engagement strategies, especially on projects in the Northern Territory, combined with local upskilling through apprenticeships. FIFO staff fill immediate gaps, but there's a push for prefabricated modular construction that can maximise efficiency and minimise boots on the ground whenever possible. Even digital tools are part of the game now. Think building information, modelling and simulation tech being key assets to stay ahead.
Modular builds. Oh, I've seen some stunning setups where they crane drop entire facilities into place. It's like industrial Lego. But does all that flashy pre-work scale for things like, you know, massive fuel farms or an East Coast nuclear submarine base?
Not entirely, no. Infrastructure tied to programs like AUKUS is going to require heavy civil works, deep subterranean facilities and components custom built to extreme specs. But what the industry can do is focus on core collaborative partnerships. For instance, Australian firms teaming up with US and UK nuclear specialists to share expertise. It's already happening around HMAS Stirling's upgrades.
And that's where strategy meets logistics. If every player aligns correctly, we're looking at a defence estate that's resilient, purpose-built, and geared for a highly volatile operational backdrop. So, as we wrap up today, it's clear that developing the defence estate is a uniquely daunting challenge, but also one filled with opportunity for innovation and collaboration. If you're as intrigued by these insights as we are, remember to subscribe to DEC Net Pro. There's so much more to uncover. Detailed reports, expert strategies, and additional deep dives into the world of defence infrastructure and beyond.
Exactly. And don't forget to sign up for the DECnet mailing list. It's one of the best ways to stay on top of everything defense infrastructure related, news, updates, you name it. Plus, they'll deliver it right to your inbox, so no excuses about missing out.
Oh, and one more thing. Share this episode with your colleagues. Whether they're in contracting, consulting, or just defense enthusiasts like us, this stuff is way too important to keep to yourself.
Absolutely. The more people who understand what's happening with the defense estate, the stronger our collective response to the challenges and opportunities becomes. So go ahead and spread the word.
And that's all for today, folks. Thanks for joining us. Until next time, stay inspired, stay informed, and keep thinking strategically.
Take care, everyone. See you next time.